This is a podcast from the people behind the world's longest running football fans podcast, The Celtic Underground. You can subscribe and listen anywhere that you get your podcasts. You can have a free subscription where this lands straight in your email inbox, and you can go to theCelticUnderground.substack.com. You can also have a paid subscription where you get some additional content, including the In Conversation podcast every week, End, and the Selecta Written, which is basically a rehash of the E-Tim's Rumour Mill, oops, from Glenn Tintin from years ago. Anyway, this is me, Harry Brady, with this week's podcast.
Hi, welcome to the latest match podcast, and today we've got a bit of cornucopia of delights for you. We're going to be looking, myself and Ross Hall, we're going to be looking obviously at the cup final and all attendant matters to do with the cup final. A wee recap of last Saturday, obviously accenting on probably James Forrest, I think it's fair to say, and finally we'll be taking some readers' questions, and I'm hoping Ross is all spick and span with that in terms of you got that in front of you.
I have, although I was just actually, just before we started, I was actually in the process of replying to one that went up this morning, which wasn't a reader's question, it was just something that someone else had posted, but I can access them easily enough. Always prepared, Andrew, always prepared.
And we're going to, brevity will be byword, so we'll do this good sharp time anyway. But say, before we get on a cup final, naturally enough, end of the season, strange old day in a way. I think it was almost been coloured by the fact that the TIFO thing was, you know, going up to, walking up to the game, the whole Green Brigade kind of TIFO farrago was very much in people's minds. They were wondering what was going to be in the seats. As it was a wee paper flag. I mean, I did my best. I flew it and all that. You feel like a bit of a prick. It's just never a good look. Hold on. I mean, why don't we actually? My boys kept one. Give me a second, Ross. You can fill 5 seconds. I'm going to get my flag and show you how naff it was.
He's saying to me to fill these 5 seconds, and I'm just, I can't wait to see this flag, to be honest. So, apologies for the silence. But yeah, as Andrew said, the rest of this podcast, predominantly a little bit about the St Mirren game and a lot about James Forrest. And he has that woeful flag. I appreciate that you were quite happy at the fact that it's paper and so obviously it's recyclable. But when you have a paper stick with a paper flag, realistically, it's always going to be, it's like a McDonald's straw if you've got a milkshake. It's a bit crap.
It was like a McDonald's straw.
But, you know, that's what it is.
Look as if I'm playing a flute. We don't want that on this podcast.
No.
Well, enough of that. So that wasn't a great start. Although I had a great start myself, because my arrangement for hiring my season ticket off a friend had kind of ended. So I didn't have a ticket on Saturday, and I was able to conduct an experiment. I went down ticketless to see if I could buy one outside. Mm-hmm. And see, walking up, you thought, I'm never going to get a ticket here, because you can tell. It's a funny European games, you can tell how much busier it is than just a commoner garden league game. You just know for the throng of people. So I said to my brother, never going to get one. Then I just saw this really old guy holding up his season ticket, ran up to him, and it was like, I only had £20 on me. I thought people would be quite happy to get in for it. And he went, no, I want 35. And it's maybe 35 is fair enough. It was for the old main stand. Mm-hmm. If you subdivide it, you only get 19 games now. I think the season ticket next year in that area is nearly £800. So by a simple maths, what's 19 into 800?
It's 10:43 this morning. I have been up since 6 a.m. when I told you, you want me to do maths? Are you having a laugh?
So 20 into 800 would be 40, wouldn't it? Aye. So that'd be £40. So actually 35's not even covering the guys you know, if you're subdividing, because you only get 19 games, you know, you don't get any cup games or any...
42 quid.
So he thought he was doing my favour at 35. As it was, I could only muster 30, and I thought, he thought about it. He wasn't a particularly warm guy, I have to say. And he went, ah, that'll do. But then he said, I'm going to speak to my friends. You don't get the ticket. You come with me at the gate. I give it to you, and I wait for you at the other side. So I said, right. He said, so I'm going to talk to my friends, so you need to come with me. So I had to come and stand as he spoke to his friends and family. Like, because he determined when I went in.
Quite right as well, in my opinion, Andrew. Quite right as well. That's the price of entry. You're getting a below average price. You got 5 minutes being social with some randoms, or 10 minutes, I don't know. Bye.
But they weren't very...
I'm not sympathising with you. I'm sorry. I'm not.
They weren't that sociable either. But and then you know what happened? So I went up to the turnstile. He eventually says, I'm going to wait here for somebody else. So he sent this young lad that was always like maybe his grandson or something. He says, he'll take you in. So he took me in. And it turned out it was only a couple of sections from where my family sit, which is pretty... My family on the south stand, the old stand. And so it was only a couple of sections. It was right at the end, you know, where the way fans are. You know, that kind of corrugated iron. So I was right, I was about three seats to the very end of the main stand. If you're looking on at the pitch, to the right of the main stand. But then I got a phone call from my brother. I said, do you realise you went in with your son's ticket? Season ticket? He can't get in. So I had to run back down to the gate and push it through the little space between the, you know, the gate and the hinge. But by that time, so I ran back up. I couldn't remember where I was sitting because I'd never sat there before. I only sat in it for about 10 seconds. So I ended up sitting somewhere that wasn't in my seat because I'd no idea where my seat was.
My lesson from this is never go to a game with you where you're holding the tickets. that's what I'm taking for this. Never go to a game with you when you're holding the tickets.
I'll tell you what, it was like quite impressive. I don't know, for you watching it, I have to say, I thought St Mirren did a good job. I mean, they must be by far the biggest team in the country. Really, really big, really physically imposing. Celtic didn't really get going. It was back to the Celtic about a month ago or so.
It was, in terms of the St Mirren team, they are, you know, Stephen Robinson sort of made his marker, signing a lot of just, you know, big beefy boys who generally quite quick, quite powerful, quite capable of taking on what are relatively simple instructions in terms of how he wants to play. And he does it effectively, especially against us. In terms of our performance, I'll be honest and say, I was sat, and as many of our subscribers know, I was basically itching to get out because although it was trophy day, I was going to watch the young ones play their Scottish Cup finals and the under-15s kicked off at 2 o'clock, so I was always going to miss a bit of that. But I was kind of hoping, you know, with 70 minutes gone, I thought, if we're 4 or 5 up, to be honest, I've got it recorded, I'm going to dive early. But we were 1-0 behind, and I'm sort of hanging on, and obviously James Forrest was looking good, and you're going, I want to see this moment. If it, you know, I did want to watch it on record. I want to see this moment. And so thankfully that paid off, but that meant I missed the first half of the under-15s cup final, which was a pity. But it was an awful game. Like, you know, it was St Mirren very dogged, you know, humping balls up the park. They got a bit of joy for it. There was a bit of poor defending on our part that led to their goal. And that's what they are quite good at. They're quite good at sort of putting defenders in situations where they need to be quite accurate or quite fun with their clearances. Ours was poor. They get their goal. And then after that, it was one-way traffic for the majority again, but it was just a bit predictable, a bit slow.
Yeah.
The amount of emphasis, the amount of times we tried to get in off the left side in comparison to the right. And when you think about it, if you think back to that game, just think it in your head in terms of where were we getting a lot of joy? Well, it was James Forrest was getting a lot of joy when he came on. Kuhn, you know, he had moments. There was the one he should have passed to Bernardo, but he took the extra 2-3 touches. If he passes it to Bernardo, Bernardo's got a clean hit. Yep. Passes it late. By that point, the, you know, the big beefy boys of St. Mirren have sort of crowded that area. But it was a good game. And you know, when we were coming to this podcast, that was why I'd said in the comment section and the Substacker, this game to me has not really got a great deal worth talking about, with the exception of that one moment at the end of the game where James Forrest slams into the net. It wasn't even the greatest finish in the world. You know, I don't know if he was far left.
But I wouldn't have been happy with my keeper there, really, to be honest with you. But what does it matter? But it was so incredible. People have talked about the kind of the stadium just kind of, it was this kind of deep, kind of guttural almost, kind of just kind of outpouring the joy. It was just, it was something else in the stadium.
Well, obviously, you were there, but even like watching it on Sky, and I'm going to use this to go off on a little bit of a ranty tangent. When he scored, the roar that came through the TV, which I could imagine on the ground, having been there on Champions League nights and, well, wins against Rangers where we've won the last minute or whatever.
It was one of those bone kind of, you know, like just kind of shuddering ones.
The roar that came through was unbelievable. And the reason it was unbelievable is because he is a guy who has come through, has been here for all this time, you know, 16 seasons scoring on the bounce. He scored a goal that, take all that away, it was a draw against St. Mirren, last day of season, dead rubber game, meant nothing. The roar was the equivalent of a last-minute goal against Rangers or in a Champions League game that wins us the game. That was how big it was. And the reason it was that big is because of who he is and what he represents. And so the one little ranty tangent I'm going to go off on here is, when anybody says to me they do not care if we have youth players that come through our system and in our team, that doesn't really matter, if you cheered that goal like everybody else did when that went, I'm in my living room and I'm cheering like a madman, going like, you wanted that for him. Everybody wanted that. If you cheered that goal, you cannot stand and tell me that not having prospects come through and be like him, be like Cal McGregor, even be like Tony Ralston, is not important to what we are as a club. Because you do not get a role like that for a last-minute goal that only gets you 1 point against St. Mirren in a dead-rubber game if you know who he is and know what he represents. And that's why it's important. That's my little ranty thing. Over, I'm not going to go over and over it, but I think you're right.
That's
a really sort of pertinent point.
I'd always rather see...
why it's important.
I know, I think you're right. I'd always rather see a guy coming through. I mean, my boy's now 15 and I'm growing up, and I said, you're so lucky, because when he was really getting into Celtic, you had Tierney, you had McGregor, you had Forrest. I said, not only these three great guys, but they're, you know what I mean? They've got it in their blood, you know, well, you know, they're like, in terms of the way that they've been inculcated with what Celtic means, you know, they really are. It means so much. And we saw a game last night where you thought to yourself, like, my God, it just looked like people that didn't really care. Like, there's no surprise to me. It's like players like Maguire and Johnston making the difference and all that. It was like almost kind of British-based players in a way that they have that, so that kind of drive. It really means everything. And it's meant everything to, like, McGregor and Forrest. And Forrest, now you saw how, I mean, it's those moments that make Celtic, when you think back in, and this wasn't a guy who came through the ranks, but Simunovic, when he scored that goal the day we were like celebrating the life of Billy McNeil, and we're number five, and after 67 minutes he scored and all that. Those are the moments people think, they sometimes get us wrong as Celtic supporters, think it's all about the trophies and all that. It's all about the lore. This is a club in love with the lore, you know, like the kind of, because we see a kind of folklore, almost the kind of, everything to do with the kind of folklore, Celtic somehow fit in with that, because it's almost kind of quasi, it's almost quasi kind of unbelievable, like supernatural in terms of what this club's come from and what it represents, the community and all that. All those things are wrapped into a moment like that without getting, hope I'm not getting kind of arsy, but it really feels like these are the special moments. And it's, For Forrest, for a guy who, I mean, I wrote when he did 12 in a row, he did that, I think it was in September of his kind of 12th consecutive season. So I wrote a piece about why is he no appreciated the profit's not appreciated in his own land. And I got Joe Miller, and I was hoping Joe would say, no, it's terrible and all that. And Joe was saying, ah, you can kind of see it. He said, because he never really takes a team apart. You know, there's many days where Celtic are really in their pomp, and you don't see Forrest really kind of, you know, as you expect for a winger sometimes when those are great days, you're really absolutely destroying the opposition, because he's not necessarily a kind of fancy Dan player. He's not really good tricks and all that. So, but bizarrely, I think we're seeing almost that kind of, because he knows the supporter behind him now in a way, I don't think they've ever been behind him for, at least not in the past decade, really, even when he's been playing well.
Yeah, I think you're right in saying football is, when you're a kid and you think about football, it's an imagination story. It is what you have in your head as to what you want to be when you grow up, and imagining scoring your first goal against Rangers if you're a Celtic fan or whoever you support. All these different things that go through your head as a kid, as a football supporter, and for the team that you love, it's a fantasy land. He's lived that fantasy. And we've got to enjoy watching it. And he's living the dreams that we all dreamed as kids, like, you know, 16 seasons scoring consecutively, winning the amount of trophies that he's won. Like, he is the guy that we all grew up going, if he had one moment of his career, you'd be delighted. I want to call him an old man, but he's not. He's still, you know, what's he now,
33, yeah.
He's still potentially got another year or two. And the one thing I would say that is probably brilliant about Forrest is there's a lot of players that get older and just accept the fact that, you know, I'm a winger, so I've slowed down a wee bit. I'm not going to be the guy that I was when I was 21. And they kind of just disappear. He's become really clever at how he uses what the energy that he's got, uses the speed that he's still got, and he is still quick. But how he's learned to play the game in so many different ways, his ability to come inside, that wee outside of the foot shot or pass that he's got. You know, he's able to play off the left now. He's become a really, I wouldn't say complete player, but he's a player who is far more than just that guy who goes to the right wing, runs the byline, crosses it over. He's added so many different bits to his games over the years. And he probably has been underappreciated because he is quite unassuming. He doesn't have the social media. He doesn't plaster his picture, his highlights over Instagram or Facebook or whatever else. He's the guy who goes to training, trains all week, trains hard, and you've never heard anybody criticise him in the entire time he's been at Celtic for how he trains. He had the problems with adapting to the sort of strain on his knees, and he learned to adapt to that and changed his running style slightly. He goes on a Saturday, on the bench, playing whatever, gives it everything, never moans, never complains, does what's asked him, game finishes, goes home, lives his life. That is, you know, you did see James Forrest pictures. We've never seen a Scott Brown moment where he's been pictured outside at Chippy, you know, drunk, sat on the bit. He has been a consummate professional as well as a great player. And in some ways, that maybe has led to him being a wee bit underappreciated, because he's not that guy who sought the limelight. He just goes, does his bit, does it well, and goes home. Does his thing at home. Couldn't he tell you a thing about James Forrest outside of football? Not one.
No, I don't think there's much. I think he plays pool or something like that. Like, if that's the only thing I could have ever learned, that he was quite in his pool, and he used to be a great, he was an excellent tennis player, wasn't he? When he was younger.
The only thing I can tell you about James Forrest is him and Tom Rogic, when Rogic was at Celtic, used to come for a night out in Edinburgh once every couple of months. If they had a weekend off, they used to come for a night out in Edinburgh on George Street. And that is the only thing I can tell you, and that could be said for pretty much every footballer in Scotland.
He was really close to Tom Rogic. He seems to be close to Ida. And all the players love him. There's such a respect for him. But as there should be. I mean, nobody's won more honours than him at 26 honours. He's one of 30 players to score 100 goals for the club. 108 goals, I think he has. I think he's only one of three or four players that's got 100 goals and 100 assists, did I read the other day? But I mean, because in the old days, they didn't really do assists, so you couldn't. We don't know how many assists that Jimmy Johnson had at end, do we?
Not that I know. I would imagine a few.
But they weren't, you know, in those days. Yeah. they weren't recording them.
Yeah, no, the data that you have on players for like back in those days is fairly minimal, just because obviously the technology just didn't exist back then. But no, I'm fairly certain he has passed the 100 assist mark and 100 goals mark. I'm sure I read the same thing as you. But I just think, you know, he is a player to be absolutely celebrated. I'm delighted that he got that goal. I'm delighted to see the representation that gives of our players. It was the only moment in that game that was particularly worthwhile. But, you know,
There's just a pure affection about it now. There's a pure affection. Yeah. And I think he's actually feeding off it. But let us segue right into this Scottish Cup final. Has he played his way into the team? Do you think Rodgers would consider it?
I don't see why he wouldn't consider it, because I think the problem that we will have this week is I have tried looking at Aberdeen and what I think Aberdeen will do this Saturday, and I honestly have no clue, because their form is that bad that I can't believe that Jimmy Thielen's not going to look this week and go, I can't carry on playing the way we've played. However, as you referenced last night, we watched the UEFA Europa Cup final, whatever you want to call it, where two teams, one team adapted and changed, and they won. And that's one thing I'd like to say. You know, I know some people are funny about Ange, but I am delighted for Ange. I am absolutely delighted for him.
Absolutely buzzing for him, aye.
Yeah. But when you look to the Aberdeen game, everybody's looking and assuming that Graham Shinney will probably play at left-back. Now, the other lad that plays at left-back is Jack McKenzie, who got smacked in the head by Seat for a fan. I say that laughing. I'm not laughing. It is absolutely ridiculous and abhorrent that people are throwing seats onto pitches. It is like...
You could...
And I'm glad to see that someone's been charged for that, because that is just like... You know, how daft do you have to be to throw a... To break a seat off and then launch it at someone, especially there was a lot of people on that pitch at that time. So Jack McKenzie would be the other person who might play at left back for them. But then I'm sort of thinking, and it sounds like, if I'm Jack McKenzie, do I want to play for them? Like, I know it's one person, but I'm looking and going, you know, is this the place I want to be? So
I think he's leaving in the summer anyway, so.
Well, that's probably accelerated. I would have thought, I didn't think you'd be quick to go back. I know I wouldn't. So him or Graham Shinney at left-back, and obviously in the last game against Aberdeen, we've absolutely mullered them, and James Forrest ran Graham Shinney ragged. So if you're of the opinion that Graham Shinney starts, then Forrest, you know, why not? Would I start him? No. I feel awful saying that, but... I am delighted for Forrest. I am delighted for the fact that he got his goal. And I understand the hesitancy that some people have it with Nicholas Coon at the moment, because his form latter part of the season has fluctuated. But Nicholas Coon this season has been a big part of why we've got to this point, having had a very, very good season. Almost phenomenal season if we win this on Saturday. And I think Nicholas Coon presents Aberdeen more problems than Forrest does. However, Forrest for the bench for the last half hour, if that was required, I think that's a great move. But it doesn't matter who he starts to me, because it's one of those where I will be happy with either of them. They're both good enough to play that game. But personally, I think Nicholas Coon is the extra goal threat that he offers. He's capable and assist much as James is as well. But if it was me, I'd go Coon, which I know is going against the grain based on what I would go with Coon.
There's a sentiment, I'm sure there's a sentiment element that's coming in, like desiring to see Forrest start. I know that's where I'm coming from. But Brendan Rodgers, he's not a guy for sentiment. It will be Coon. Yeah, it definitely will be Coon.
No, he's definitely not a guy for sentiment in that regard. But that's the thing. I like the fact that we don't know who it's going to be. I like the fact that there are two players that you look at and go, if either of them starts, you're not looking and going, that's a weak area of the team. You're looking and going, that's a really strong area. So if Coon starts and maybe Disney plays so well, you've got James Forrest on the bench who is, you know, should be full of the joys of life, who will come on and is able to make a difference. If James Forrest starts and he maybe tires towards then, you're looking and going, you've got Nicholas Kuhn, a guy who's double figures for goals and assists this season, coming on against a tired Jack McKenzie or Graham Shinney or whoever. I'm perfectly happy with both. My biggest concern this game is more the other side.
Yeah, midfield.
Midfield is, and I say concern, I'm not concerned. I'm quite at ease with the team going into this game. But I think the midfield's the biggest decision, and also Ida Maeda and who plays in the middle. Does Ida maybe start on the bench, and, you know, potentially does Forrest start on the left? I think the makeup of the front three will be interesting.
I did wonder about whether he would consider playing Maeda through the middle. That might be his way around it, in the sense that he could bring him. I wouldn't be averse to that, perhaps, either. I'd prefer to maybe see Maeda through the middle than Ida.
It's a lovely headache for him to have, because, you know, bar Jota being injured, he's got Johnny Kenny, who's come on, wee bit of confidence, he's got him as an option. He's not going to start, but, you know, having that option is a nice thing to have. It's that sort of nice thing going, I've got a guy on the bench who's come on, he's hungry. You can see how fast he is. His pace is frightening. He's, you know, a race between him and Dyson would be an interesting one.
Yeah, he looks strong as well. Like he's as I say, he's a much bigger unit than I thought he was. I don't know if he's just bulked up.
Yeah, he went back to Ireland. He was successful when he went back there. He's come over. He's had to bide his time. Many times I was disappointed to see him not make the bench, but I'm delighted for him now to see that is getting his opportunity. But I think, again, I say this as a positive thing, that he's got tough decisions to make for the right reasons, because they're all carrying decent form to some extent. Even Ida, who some people would be critical of, his form has been all right. He's scoring goals. I think he looks far more comfortable in the team than he did in the first half of the season. So if he starts, I'm happy. If we start with Dyson through the middle, happy. The left side would become a wee bit more complicated if Dyson's there, because then you're saying, well, is it Forrest or Yang? And neither of them, that's their preferred position. But you know that you're going to get a good job at either of them on that side. So, we'd be happy enough. And then, as you rightly pointed out there, probably the biggest decision will be Bernardo or Macau.
Yeah, I would hope he does. Bernardo, nothing really came off for him on Saturday. But he was good the previous Wednesday, and everybody was a wee bit off it on Saturday. But we keep hearing that, he's not Rodgers. Rodgers inherited him. This is I think, almost his problem, that was in the pipeline for Celtic to activate the buyout clause, remember, after his year on loan. So he's not Rodgers' player.
But then, if you remember, they never activated his buyout clause. The buyout clause lapsed, and then we bought him after it had lapsed. The buyout clause was initially reportedly for about, I think it was about 5 million quid.
So, and then I just mean that, they renegotiated.
So I wouldn't say he's not a Rodgers player, because I would have to assume that Rodgers would have agreed to that renegotiation for him to say, right, well, if we can get him for this price, then I'm happy to have him. But, internal workings, who knows?
Yeah. But you just do, whether it's right or wrong, you're just getting the feeling that he's not one of our favoured son of Rodgers. But I would play him ahead of McCown for this final. He gets about Hamden big pitch and all that, they say.
Yeah, I'm going against you again.
That's good.
Oddly, I would happily see either play. I would be tempted to go McCown. My only thinking behind this is the loss of Rayo is a big blow. I think much bigger than many people would have thought or would have said ages ago. But Rio's ability to drop into the six beside Cal to take the ball and allow Cal space and for them to drive on for different areas is good. Rio's ability to play an eight and then drift to the left and sort of go into other areas. And also his ability to go and be like the second striker in a defensive press where we'll switch to like a 4-4-2.
Yeah,
and it would often be like Dyson or Ida, and Rio would be the next person to go before the wide players. And then Weir's ability to play in and around the 10. Now, he's not the perfect 10 player, but he's got abilities to play in all three of those roles. And neither McCowan or Bernardo do. Bernardo's better middle, deeper, and McCowan's better further forward. I think the problem that both of them have is they probably both in an ideal world would like to play on the right side, which is Engels' spot, and Engels is going to start. So that's, you know, that's cemented. But the reason I've gone McCowan is I think, although nothing really came off from last week when he came on, I like the fact that McCowan's quite happy playing on the edge of the box and that he'll play the wee passes into the box and that he's got a shot on him. He is more likely to get a goal. And so just on the point of more likely to create something and more likely to score, I would go with McCowan over Bernardo because I don't think Aberdeen are going to throw too much forward unless it's on counter-attacks. And I think that'll basically be for them to just, you know, look for Keskin and look for Habby Gay, look for Kevin Nisbet. I would like to think that our defence, on a good day, will deal with that. So I would rather have a more attacking player than a more... Not that Bernardo's a defensive player, but I would rather have the one who's got the better offensive capabilities, if it was me.
Fair enough. As you say about the other decisions, you know, I'm no heartbroken whether he goes for McCowan over Bernardo. I just feel as if Bernardo's, maybe again, I'd be a terrible manager because there's a wee bit of sentiment for me. I just feel as if that he should have maybe had more minutes this season. I think there should have been more of a kind of... Bernardo seemed to be burned by the Westfalenstadion or whatever they call it now, the Borussia Dortmund game. He started that game from memory, didn't he?
Yes.
And it seemed to be that whatever happened that night, obviously, like Rodgers went back over it and back over it, and you find that sometimes a really bad defeat. I remember it happened under Ange, the St Mirren game, when they lost 2-0. That was the only game they lost, actually, in his second season. And a lot of people, I think it was the end of Welsh, kind of after that, you know, there were certain people that were blamed for it, and he thought, you know, I know what went wrong there, and I'm not going to make those mistakes again. Mm. With a really bad defeat, sometimes you can get managers, it just turns a manager's opinion, that one defeat.
Yeah, I think that's certainly... I don't know if Dortmund has been the issue for Bernardo. It might have been.
He's also been injured.
The injury's been a bit of a problem. And, you know, I think anybody who, again, has ever been in our Substack and asks questions about players' form and things like that, I always think when players get bad injuries during the middle of the season, and it's one of the things they'll lose in the winter break, is a pain in the ass because it allows players to have like that mini pre-season. And we have had a lot of players this season that I give them massive credit that never had their pre-season once. Even Bernardo came in, I think we were part of the way through the America thing before he arrived. And he was one of the earlier ones to have, obviously, Casper. And I think Bernardo was after Casper, which is weird considering we already had this sort of agreement in principle. But obviously, as we said, they renegotiated that. But then if you lose a big chunk of the early part of the season where you've got that build-up, which he did, and then you've not got that chance to get that match sharpness again through games, and you know, Rodgers has been fairly tight with sharing the minutes. As you say, I think Bernardo probably could add more minutes, but he's got what he's got. So I think you lose that momentum, and I think that when he's come back in, you're seeing flashes of him being good, but you're also seeing flashes of him be that player that's a step behind everybody else because everybody else has got that level of match sharpness that comes from playing 30, 40 odd games, and he was having to start afresh. That's why I think you've seen a better version of Ida in the second half of the season, because it was almost like this first half of the season was a mix of trying to just, as daft as it sounds, re-establish himself, having not had a pre-season, having had that sort of period of being in limbo because Norwich and Celtic were fighting over fees and, you know, he missed his flight to the Norwich pre-season game. All these sorts of daft wee things. And then he never really got his pre-season worse and you know, the same could be said with Engels and Trusty. And so I wonder what level you will see off them next season, having had that, hopefully this summer. And so the same again with Bernardo. Whereas, and again, I would probably give the advantage to McCowan in that sense of not that he had a pre-season with us either, because he signed late, but he's had the continuity of being pretty much available for beginning to end of the season.
No, I hear what you're saying.
I'm at ease. If he picks either, I'm happy. There's very few decisions he could make on Saturday in terms of what I think the starting 11 would be that would bother me. If he plays Schlupp at left back, I might be a bit upset, to be fair. But
that's the one. My God, Schlupp is just, for the guy you thought, and he's such a great game out in Munich. Mm. You thought, wow, this is a step forward from Taylor and everything else. It's so, he's playing like a guy who was told about a month ago, by the way, we're not going to be pursuing anything beyond this.
I'm beginning to think that game against Munich, he bunged the Elise, his mate, a few quid to go make me look good, pal, because honestly, nah, I feel bad.
They had been club colleagues at one point, didn't they? They knew each
other. Yeah, I think they'd been, well, Crystal Palace, they would have
Crystal
been.
Crystal Palace?
You know, no, he was brilliant that night. I'm not taking that away from that. It's just pure cheek. But I just think, in terms of the inverting thing, and the thing that surprised me a wee bit about Schlupp is, I actually, when he came, I always made the point of it, he hadn't been a left-back for years. Yeah. Like that idea that this was this, you know, guy who was going to come in and sort of solidify left-backs, like, he hadn't done it for years, for any length of time, maybe the odd sort of 5 minutes here and there late in the game for Crystal Palace, but he'd been a midfielder for years. And that's where I thought he would have excelled, in the sense of going, well, the inverting bit I thought would have been a bit easier for him because he had been a defensive midfielder and he'd sort of been that guy who played on the right side of three for Crystal Palace, even though he's not played a lot in the last couple of years. But I thought that transition might be a bit smoother for him, but
it just
not happened.
His timing's all off in the sense that he just dwells on the ball too long or he just takes the wrong options. It just looks like a fish out of water when he's trying to do that.
I suppose I am saying this, and I'm being critical of him. I've been critical of him many times, and I am being overly harsh. I know that because I'm saying to you about pre-season and match sharpness and that. And again, I'm not going down the criticise and recruitment road. This is a totally different podcast. But he was a player who barely played, and I suppose put the analytical head on and look at it and go, this is a guy who's, I can't remember offhand how many minutes he had over the last 12 months before he joined us, but there were few. Mm. And they were near the left back. And he's come in and he's been asked to get up to pace, to deal with the pressure that comes with playing with us, to sort of understand this inverted role. And as I say, I thought that transition would have been a wee bit easier for him, but just because I think it doesn't make it true. But the I suppose that is the thing with making that signing. You're signing a guy who is ice cold. He's been in the freezer for a lot of the last sort of year and a half, pretty much since Hodgson left Crystal Palace.
You're bugging him into the microwave with foot putting the defrost on.
Aye. and you're trying to do it in a period where, you know, everybody would say the league was one thing's that, but we had a lot of big games. So the Bayern Munich game, he was very good. He was really good that night. And I wonder if that need to be absolutely switched on that night because of who the opponent was a big part of that. It's just elevated them to go, like, I cannot make a wrong step tonight because if I do, I know, and he having played release, I know he'll roast me. And so I need to be absolutely on it. But then when you come back to the reality, as harsh as it is to say, of playing SPFL games, and maybe he has fell into that trap like some English players who have come up here for the Premiership have thought of, oh, I can sort of piss this, basically. And it's not quite happened. And then you kind of get that momentum.
Taylor's got to be given his, let's be honest about it, his farewell by the looks of it.
I'm still hearing to up until, what day are we on? What day is this? Thursday.
Yeah.
That's terrible. Up until last Monday, I heard from someone who knows about, is normally fairly reliable, that they felt it could still very much be done. But there was details that, has from his side, they wanted ironed out and that hadn't been ironed out. I haven't spoken to anybody this week, but, you know, and everything can change in space like 2 minutes in football. But they were still of the belief that it was very much a few minor details away from having something that might be palatable for both parties. Whether that's changed, I do not know. But,
it'd be great not only to have him as backup, and that's the reality, would be backup, but someone who could show, I mean, Tierney himself has admitted, you know what I mean, he's amazed when he watches him playing that inverted fullback role, because he plays it in a way that Tierney can't. So, you know, he could have a twofold input in the sense of he's got to bring Tierney along and he's also got to be there. Likelihood is he plays 25, 30 games.
We also have, and it's painful to say because I love the fact that Tierney, I said this when Jota came home, Tierney's coming home. That's a really nice thing. However, the Kieran Tierney that's coming home is very different from the Kieran Tierney that left. Kieran Tierney that's coming home is probably a better player having played at a higher level in many ways. But Kieran Tierney is coming home with a lot of injuries behind him.
He'll not be as explosive.
No.
Although, you know, he's been playing wide. He's been playing wide left. Oddly enough, I think somebody suggested Celtic Underground. Because you will not get any Jota for the start, at least the first few games. The first six games of the, if you get into the Champions League, a Champions League campaign or a Europa League campaign, why not play Tierney in front of Taylor? You could, you know, like, that's a potential option.
I've seen Tierney come on for Arsenal a couple of times and be placed in that sort of left wing position. I can't say I've been all
he's
that.
He's had a few crosses over and all that. Like,
yeah, I think
he also would maybe offer you a wee bit like more defensive, kind of insurance.
Yeah, there is that side. It would definitely obviously be improved because the one thing I've always loved about Tierney is as much as he was a bomb on the fullback, Tierney has a defensive mindset of sense danger. There's a lot of defenders nowadays that don't have that sort of instinct that goes, shit, I need to get back because I think this might happen. And so I'm going to make sure that I'm there to have an impact on whatever's going on. And he's good at defending against transitions. He always has been for the moment that he first set foot on the pitch. He's always had that gritty. It's like he would strike me as the guy who he'd be happy to get an assist, but he'd be delighted to get a clean sheet.
Yeah.
Even though he was a fullback who bombed on, I always got the impression that Kearney would be, if you said, what's your priority, he'd be the lad who would go, 3 points, clean sheet.
No,
whereas some defenders are like, you know, I want Tavernier. Did I get my assist? Did I get my goal? Like, you know.
Yeah, you're not doing your job as a fundamental defender. Yeah. Yeah, you're not in there as a kind of goal assister or whatever, you know, or you're in there, your priority is to defend. That's been lost a wee bit in a lot of players.
Well, this is a funny thing. So obviously coming into this game, and I always get reminded before I come on is that obviously to cover off some of the things in relation coming into this game, and it's all readily available information, but obviously the last five games, I think we've only kept one clean sheet in the last five. But obviously we've won three, drawn two. Aberdeen have won one, lost four. And they haven't scored two goals since their semi-final win against Hearts, which was extra time. And so when you're looking at this game and going, you know, in terms of how confident are you, and I know you're going to hit me with this, we're going to win 5-0. I'm telling you now,
well,
boys.
You know, the record is 6-1. It's like Dumbarton, it's like Celtic against Hibs, I think 73, and I think it's 70, or was it 71? I can't remember. But, pardon my memory, let me down in Dumbarton's way back 1890-odd, so, because I thought Celtic, you know, if they get ahead of steam up, you know, it's possible, but of course I'm no thinking it's going to be 7-1, you know, because I want the record as opposed
you
to...
You are, I know, you cut your head, we're going to run up a cricket score.
So, having said that, I'll probably one of these kind of stuffy, not necessarily be a great game again, I'm going to go for 2-0 for Celtic.
Well, we know I don't do predictions, I just want us to win. Winning a clean sheet as per usual. I mean,
and it's like, you know, it is pinch yourself stuff thinking they are going for a sixth treble in 9 years. Doesn't matter what you're up against. I know the differentials, the wage bills, is I think it's Aberdeen about 15 million, Celtic about 65. So it's a kind of a quarter of the wage bill. I think Celtic, was Celtic's no quarter of Bayern Munich's wage bill or something. So
yeah, if there's ever been a team in the land or a football player in the land who steps onto a football pitch going, well, their wages are bigger than us, or, you know, I earn more than you. I know Scott Brown was prone to telling a few players that at times on the pitch, but
he was.
I've never especially looked at a cup game and thought that in the slightest matters. In the end, you know, last night, Spurs were the underdogs. It's only slightly, to be fair, but they were the underdogs in terms of the bookies. Crystal Palace, Newcastle, you know, Bologna won the cup against Milan during the week, where Lewis Ferguson, another Scottish player, having success in Italy. And you look and you go, it's possible. Aberdeen do have threats in this game. Aberdeen have got goals in their team. They've got, you know, Kevin Nisbet, for all I don't think, there was a lot of talk years gone by that maybe he'd be a player that we would look at. I've never ever seen Kevin Nisbet as a Celtic player, but he is a good goal scorer. He does have a good goal on him. The boy Habib Gaye, who should have got sent off the other week when we played them, for his putting one through Hitati, in my opinion, but he is a pest. He's, you know, he's a big unit of boy. They've got Keskinen, who's quick. I think he was the one who caused the problem that led to Hearts getting the player sent off. I think he was the one that ran through. You know, he's quick. He can cause problems. Jamie McGrath's got a goal in it. So Aberdeen do have players who have got goals in them. And that's kind of what surprised me when I was looking at the last couple of games. And I know they've been bad, and I know that they've lost a few. But I was surprised at how few they'd scored in that sort of period. You know, I think to only score one goal in each of your last sort of five games, that's the max that you scored, really surprised me. Defensively, they've had a bit of a shocker as well.
Hold on, I'm getting all sorts of things, mate. You carry this on, like, because he doesn't like to do an edit. Brian, I'll be back in 1 second.
That's right. So Andrew's departed. So I'm just going to quickly run through some stuff in relation to the road to the Scottish Cup final. So Aberdeen on the road have beat Elgin. That was a wee derby game for them, I suppose. They beat Dunfermline, Queen's Park, those naughty scamps. My favourite team in the Scottish Cup outside the Celtic this season, of course. And then they beat Hearts in the semi, which went extra time. And if you watched it, you suffered as much as I did, because it was not a great game. Aberdeen, even though Hearts went down to 10 men, sorry, I'm just blathering about the road to the...
You're right, that was a dreadful game, the Aberdeen Hearts one. So, well, it's incredible to think that Celtic have gone for their 20th trophy out the last 25, is it? Is it 22 out of 27? Sorry, 22 out of 27.
And I know you, is it Stephen? Someone's quite fond of putting all these things in our WhatsApp chat, and to be honest, I struggle to keep up with those level of statistics. Player statistics, I'm quite good with them, but our statistics as a club over the last, you know, 25 years are just so ridiculous. Yeah.
But it's 22 out of 27 they're going for, so 27 sort of, the last 25,
You read the numbers since Martin O'Neill came in 2000 to now, and they're so stupid in terms of how ridiculous, like, it's ridiculous to think that is possible. Because I get people who go, well, we should win the league most years, especially, you know, what went on with Rangers and things like that. I get that. But to have the volume of cup wins that we've got.
Yes.
And we have, you know, they're one-off games. There's a lot can happen in just one game. A referee sends off someone. I don't know if anybody's seen the referee for this weekend, but I'm reliably informed. I asked yesterday, and is it Don Robertson?
All right, I think he's a good ref.
I can't remember who said the VAR. Is it Greg Aitken? Someone said to me it was the VAR.
Is that his farewell, Greg Aitken?
I don't know. But yeah. So, but that's what I mean. With the cup games, there's so many things that can go wrong in just a one-off game. Someone makes a missed time challenge, gets sent off. Joe Hart smacks the post for a penalty, and you're going, oh, you know, that's that. But then you win. Like, the league, I can understand our success. You can look at those numbers and go, yeah, that makes sense. But to win the volume of cups that we've won is just, it's ridiculous. It's unbelievable. It's a massive credit to anybody who's taken part in any of them, the various managers that have won them.
Yeah.
Because to be that successful in those games where just one wee thing goes wrong and all of a sudden it's over is unbelievable.
And Rodgers has gone for, what is it, his 23rd straight Scottish Cup victory?
I suspect he's going to get to the point where they're going to have to give him his own one.
Yeah, like the World Cups they do, if you win it three times. Then
he's won it that many times that they're going to have to give him his own.
Yeah.
And put on the mantelpiece. So yeah, you know we've had so much success, but like obviously, as I say, going just as you nipped away, Aberdeen that Hearts semi final. If you watched it, it was a slog to watch. I actually went out of my way to watch it. I came away from, I'd had my kids at Softplay that morning. I wish I'd stayed in the Softplay with the screaming kids and the parents not paying attention to their kids battering our kids. I'd have stayed there happily and just seen the result afterwards. But I came home and thought, I kind of want to watch this because I thought it's got Hearts, who were a team that were struggling, but they'd got to a point where they were safe, and Aberdeen had been really good at the start of the season and got innocent. And you sort of think, a bit like the final last night, you thought, surely they're just going to see this as an opportunity to put the best foot down and have a good goal. Oh, dear God, it's like pulling teeth.
Yeah. Oh, no, so... I'm pretty. This Celtic team, I don't think is going to let this slip. Not in these circumstances. This is an incredible other slice of history, as we say, a club that's built in the law. Six trebles in the space of 9 years is just, as you say, it's just inconceivable. It's utterly inconceivable. But so yeah. So we'll finish off quickly with
Thanks for downloading and listening to this podcast. However, if you are a paid subscriber, keep listening. There's more of the podcast left.
Bring me sunshine in your smile.
That is the second Nine in a Row Chronicles. It's out every Sunday between now and Christmas. And if you listen to this in the future, that's Christmas 2024. Thank you for the ongoing support that you provide to the Celtic Underground that enables us to continue to produce this fantastically high level of content. Once we've finished with the Nine in a Row Chronicles, there'll be more series that we'll be producing that will be out on a Sunday for you to listen to through the course of the week. Anyway, enough of me. Myself, St. Anthony, Robert, Andrew, we'll all be back next week for the next instalment of the second Nine in a Row Chronicles.
Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love. Sunshine in your smile, bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years, never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love.